Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable Panel of the Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke, the producer of the Roundtable on WAMC. Each weekday morning, WAMC President, CEO, and political observer Alan Chartok and Roundtable host Joe Donahue were joined by various experts, journalists, educators, and commentators to discuss current events. On Roundtable Panel of the Week in Review, we feature your favorite panelists discussing the most important issues of the week, giving you a chance to catch up, ponder, or reconsider. On Monday, January 11th, Alan and Joe welcomed immigration attorney and partner with the Albany law firm of Whiteman, Osterman & Hanna, Sienna Freeman Tolbert, Vice President for Editorial Development at the New York State Press Association, Judy Patrick, and political consultant and lobbyist, Libby Post.
So, let's get started with what's going on I was going to say the world of make-believe, but you know what I mean. The life we live in here. So a lot of talk over the weekend, of course, about ultimately the question is, how does the president take responsibility or is chastised for the actions of Wednesday and the coup attempt on our nation's capital? What we're hearing now, of course, is a lot to do with impeachment, and we are expected that pretty soon that the House is going to start moving on this. And maybe even to the extent that an initial filing today and then tomorrow and Wednesday would be the discussion with a vote on Wednesday. If the House impeaches President Trump this week, it will still have almost no effect on how long he remains in office, however. His term expires 9 days from now, and even the most rapid conceivable Senate trial would cover much of that time. But the impeachment debate is still highly consequential. The Senate has the power to both remove Trump from office and to prevent him from holding office in the future. That second power will not expire when his term ends. According to constitutional scholars, a Senate trial can happen after January 20th. And disqualifying Trump from holding office again could alter the future of American politics. It's worth pausing for a moment to reflect on how radical a figure Trump is. He rejects basic foundations of American government that other presidents from both parties have accepted for decades and decades. Look, the president has tried to reverse an election and remain in power by persuading local officials to commit fraud. He incited a mob that attacked the Capitol and killed a police officer while Congress was meeting to certify the result. Afterward, Trump praised the rioters. No surprise, of course, the behavior was consistent with Trump's entire presidency. He has previously rejected the legitimacy of elections and encouraged his supporters to commit violence. He's tried to undermine America's confidence in the FBI, the CIA, the military, Justice Department prosecutors, federal judges, and the Congressional Budget Office, as well as government scientists, government health officials, and more. He's openly used the presidency to enrich his family. In the simplest term, Trump seems to believe a president should be able to do whatever he wants. He does not appear to believe in the system of the government that the Constitution prescribes, a democratic republic. So, what are we looking at here? Well, Nancy Pelosi said the House would proceed quickly with both impeachment and a resolution asking Vice President Mike Pence and the cabinet to remove Trump from office using the 25th Amendment. Mike Pence originally said that he was not in favor of the 25th Amendment, and now, over the weekend, he said nothing is off the table. James Clyburn, the number three House Democrat, said the House might delay sending an impeachment article to the Senate to avoid getting in the way of Joe Biden's early presidential agenda. Such a delay could undercut any momentum to convict Trump. Meanwhile, Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania became the second Republican senator to call for Trump to resign, yet Toomey questioned whether the Senate could convict him after he left office. So we'll begin with those little tidbits. It's certainly enough to get us started on what is happening in the aftermath of Wednesday. Alan.
Well, there's so much to talk about, Joe, as you have just indicated. Look, you know, he's a terrible man. He has if a person wrote a novel, you couldn't even imagine that it would have any credibility at all,
right,
with all of this. A president who basically turns on his own country. You know, I think there's some good thinking here. I was delighted when I saw the Congress return and certify the election after the thugs and miscreants and bullies came into the White House. two policemen are now dead. They're dead because of this thing going on. So what we have is a bunch of murderers in so many ways. We have a legal system which really has to catch up. But there is this question that has been raised, is whether it's a good idea to go directly to impeachment in the Senate, which it is not, because Joe Biden has so much he has to do in terms of climate change, in terms of the way in which this country is run, and putting food on tables. So they're going to wait. That's the thinking. They won't send the impeachment resolution to the Senate until Biden's 100 days are over. At least that's the way that it looks now. And I think that's a very smart and good idea. But there is so much, and I can't wait to hear what the other panelists have to say about it.
So before I go to them, because you're absolutely right, but while we're on that subject, do you think the political appetite will still be there by waiting 100 days or more?
I just don't know. I think history is not going to be kind to Donald Trump. I think that Trump, it's going to, the sense, once he's out of power, and that's what it is, power. Once he's out of power, I think it's going to get worse and worse and worse for Trump. I think he's going to be seen as a Benedict Arnold. I think he's going to be seen in so many ways as a really, really bad man. And America got out from under him via the electoral process. You can't even imagine what history is going to do to this guy. So, yeah, I think he'll be worse off, Joe, not better.
Sienna.
So I think there is a strategic to delay the Senate trial, because what you have to remember is after January 20th at noon, when Biden gets in power, during that time that we allow Biden to attend to the COVID and to attend the economy, Donald Trump becomes a private citizen. So just because the Senate is not moving on their trial yet, that doesn't mean that the Department of Justice cannot charge him. They can do that, bring him up on criminal charges at that time. So I don't think the fervor necessarily will go away, because the Department of Justice will be pursuing him. Also, we also know there's cases going in New York. So Donald Trump will continue to be in the news, but only this time on the other hand as a private citizen. And so I think that's important to note, that they're looking into that, and that's what they're building right now, is that case. So Donald Trump may have to deal with two trials at the same time eventually. He may be dealing with a criminal trial from on behalf of Department of Justice, and also the Senate trial. And what that will do is, if you're bringing forward all this evidence in the criminal trial, that may give some Senate Republicans incentive, or the cover, so to speak, to feel like they can vote against him in the Senate trial.
To say nothing, Sienna, about New York State. You have Cy Vance ready to move. You have Letitia James, the Attorney General. So
exactly.
even as you so correctly suggest, even if he pardons himself and gets out from under the federal charges, he's got other things to worry about.
Judy, one of the things that has come up, and this was said by the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi yesterday on 60 Minutes, of saying that she was basically giving Mike Pence a day to figure out if he's going to remove Trump by the 25th Amendment. I think initially, until this weekend, when he said that, right after he said that the 25th Amendment was off the table, we also know that the House Speaker has reached out to Mike Pence, and he has not returned that phone call. She made that point clear. So my question is it safe to assume you think that we're not going to be going the 25th Amendment route, and we'll start the proceedings tomorrow?
You know, it's almost like they're playing a massive game of chicken to see what's going to happen here. You know, Mike Pence has got to be outraged. Those rioters were calling for him. They were looking for him. They were looking for Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. They were looking, actually, Lord knows what would have happened if they had come across any elected person at that point. They weren't just people in silly costumes taking selfies. They were trying to overthrow our government. And Mike Pence, he's he is playing, you know, he's playing a game. Well, it's not a game, but they're all being very strategic. I mean, if I were the president, the cleanest way out for him is to resign and have Pence pardon him. And maybe that's what's going on in the background. You have all this public pressure being put on Pence, on Trump. He clearly violated federal law. He clearly incited that mob to storm the Capitol. And he's got to know that. And unless he can self-pardon, but that's just going to complicate the situation, and the federal prosecutors are going to have no excuse but to pursue challenging that self-pardon. So the cleanest way out for him is to resign, maybe the day before. Blame everybody and their brothers for doing it, and give Pence the authority to pardon him. The question is, would Pence actually do that?
That's a great question.
Judy, I'll just briefly, my concern is, if I was counsel for Donald Trump, I would say he shouldn't resign unless he had a guaranteed pardon from the New York State. Because if you recall, that's the New York State, Manhattan DA was the one that was able to get his records from the Supreme Court, his tax records. So they are really moving very fast to build this case against them. So he would not only need to appeal. If I was his counsel, I'd be appealing to Como as well as to Pence to pardon him, because he needs both of those pardons to be safe.
Can you imagine Andrew Cuomo giving this guy a pardon?
No.
I cannot.
I mean, not in the current state of their relationship, which by all accounts they haven't spoken since Wednesday, and it's always been somewhat tense.
What, you know, I watched the 60 Minutes interview with Nancy Pelosi last night, and what struck me was she was close to tears, as many of us were, watching what happened at the Capitol on Wednesday, because it was such a disgrace and degradation of the democracy and country that we do love. You know, we do love this country. Some of us fear our government, and, you know, for the last 4 years, that was certainly the case. But we love this country. We love the institutions of democracy and the republic. And when I saw her tear up, I knew that we were in a spot where people were having this emotional reaction, not only to the threat of their own lives, but to the threat of our own democracy.
Libby Post on the Roundtable panel on Monday, January 11th. That was this week. This is Roundtable Panel The Week in Review. I'm producer Sarah LaDuc, and we'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to Roundtable Panel The Week in Review. I'm producer Sarah LaDuc. On Wednesday, January 13th, the show started about an hour and a half late as the House of Representatives debated the second impeachment of President Donald Trump. Joe and Alan were joined by investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor Rosemary Armeo and former associate editor of the Albany Times-Union, Mike Spain.
The House is currently debating whether to advance an article of impeachment that accuses President Trump of inciting an insurrection. Some Republicans were embracing the effort to charge him with high crimes and misdemeanors. The House last night formally called on Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment to strip Trump of power. He declined to do that in writing a letter to Nancy Pelosi. And now we are looking to see how many Republicans come aboard, because there are many Republicans who are saying, not many, but a growing number, let's put it that way, who have come forward and said that they are ready to vote for impeachment. Right now, that list includes, of course, Representative Liz Cheney, Representative Adam Kinzinger of Illinois, Representative Fred Upton of Michigan, Representative Jamie Butler of Washington, and Representative John Katko of New York, who was, we should note, the first Republican to publicly announce that he would support an impeachment message. So, Alan, I think the big surprise, Liz Cheney, of course, those two have been going at it for a long time. So, but for her to be the third ranking Republican to come out and say, yes, I support impeachment, I'm curious to your thoughts on that. But the larger story, too, is the reporting from the New York Times in regards to Mitch McConnell, and Mitch McConnell saying that he, while not saying that he would vote for it, saying that he privately backs impeachment.
Well, yes, it's extraordinary because those are both two major leaders in their various houses. The Republicans are really up against it here. I mean, you know, what are they going to say? That it, look, they were subjected to getting the COVID from these folks who were coming in. There could have been any, there were five deaths that resulted as a result of all this. They're in a very tough spot. They can't say that was good or right. What they can do, and what they are doing, is saying that they don't think that the president can be held responsible for it. Now, I don't know how to put this more bluntly than this, but we all damn well know that the president sent them down there. He did. He sent them down, and he said he was going to send them down. And they went down to the Capitol. He can claim, well, I didn't really mean them to do all of that damage or to, but he did it. And so now they're holding him responsible. The Republicans are having a hell of a time, if you've been listening or watching this, to defending this. Our friend Jim McGovern, who, of course, is on the congressional corner all the time and who is a wonderful, brilliant man, has been overseeing all of this morning because he's the chairman of the powerful Rules Committee, which set the rule for this debate. The Republicans, to me, sound absolutely pathetic and bereft of any kind of ability to defend the president. But in any case, we'll see.
You know, the defense, Mike, and we do have Rosemary, so we'll go to Rosemary in just a second. Good morning, Rosemary. How are you?
Good morning. I'm sorry to be late.
That's all right. We're all about an hour and 45 minutes late, so it's fine. It's understood. Mike, we're talking about and Alan is talking about the Republicans trying to defend this, and I mean, if it wasn't so important, it would be amusing. But they keep on saying that it's time to lower the temperature. It seems like a weak argument, doesn't it?
Well, these are the very same people who have stoked the misinformation, the false narrative that for 4 years, and including most recently that the election was invalid, that Joe Biden was not elected president, that Trump was, and that the election was rigged. They stoked all that right up until last week, and now they're calling for unity. And I love Jim McGovern's response to that just now. He said, we won't have unity until we have truth and accountability. And I think that's really exactly what's going on. You know, until yesterday, when Trump made those ridiculous statements before he got on the plane to go to Texas, you know, where he said, people are angry. And he used the false equivalence, you know, and said that the real problem were the riots in Portland and Seattle. And said that anything he said at the Stop the Steal rally on January 6th was totally appropriate. I think that really emboldened a lot of Democrats to stick to their guns here. And rather than just admonish or censure Trump, as some Republicans are trying to broker, they really want to push forward with the impeachment and try to get a trial going in the Senate. And you know, Mitch McConnell leaking out that story to the New York Times, sounds intentional. It was to get the message out there that he's not going to stand in the way. He's not going to whip up votes to block impeachment. He's going to let the Republicans vote their conscience. And so is Kevin McCarthy, the minority leader in the House of Representatives. He's, in fact, there was a report last night that he was weighing whether he needs to go over to the White House and personally urge Trump to step down and stop all this right now. It sounds a lot like 1974, August of 1974, doesn't it?
It does. Hey, what do you think about what do you, Rosemary? One last question for you, both you and Mike. What do you guys think of the fact that it's clear that with Liz Cheney doing what she's doing now, that the Republican establishment has decided to fight back and to declare war? But the Bushes have never been on the side of Trump, that's for sure. And Liz Cheney is, of course, a Bushite. And I think we should make mention of that.
I think that the Republicans get no credit for standing up now in the last week of what has been a poisonous administration.
You make a point.
Because this is so indefensible. They are not declaring war. They are not being brave. They are doing what they should have done at least a year ago in the impeachment, if not way before that. I have to tell you why I was late this morning. I just got a call from the wonderful people in New Albany's benefits. And they want to make sure that the minute that I am eligible, now that I'm teaching again, that I will get health benefits. I gave them up. They know. They have it on their records because I was so opposed to Trump that I went overseas. And so they said they want to make sure that I get in the minute that is possible. And Steny Hoyer, who was not a graceful speaker at all, gave remarks this morning talking about Al Green, who called for impeachment of the president, I think 3 months after he was in office, or it was a year after he was in office. And Al Green was right. And Hoyer, haltingly, and it was making me crazy how badly he read it, but it was a very moving indictment. That what he called for is exactly what the president is being impeached for today. This was foreseeable years ago, and everyone chose not to act. And the damage to this country is enormous. Okay. Impeach, he'll get impeached. The votes are there, and that's going to happen. And not all Republicans are going to go along with it. I want them punished. I want that lawyer Turley, who's again saying, oh, you're moving too fast. Impeachment has become unworkable if you cannot impeach this president for this offense. And I also want censure and expulsion and criminal prosecution of now three congressmen who have been implicated as helping the organizers of this insurrection, showing them around and pointing out the ways that you could get into the House. This is, it's all just appalling. And it's not as if, as the Republicans are saying, we impeach now, we can't do any of these other things. Yes, you can. Impeach them and prosecute them and continue to investigate. 1 week left, and I think of the damage he can do. He can pardon himself. He can pardon the other, I guess it's up to like 90 arrests they've made. He can pardon them before there's a full investigation. He can just do so much more damage. Please get him out. And yes, they should be, all of his pals, all of his enablers should be in the White House right now saying, get out now, resign. And it's better for him if he does. He's going to lose all kinds of benefits and freebies if he leaves. It's not as if he cares about reputation. That's not the deal. He has no shame, whatever. But just practically, they should be doing what is right, which is getting him out as soon as possible and trying to fix the damage.
Probably over the last 3 days, I have watched, 2,876 different pundits. Not one of them believe that, as Mike mentioned, Kevin McCarthy going into the president's office a la 1972 and saying it's time to resign and the president will do it. I assume this group is on that, believes that as well. It won't be that easy.
Easy, sure. Well.
Go ahead, Mike. Sorry.
No. It wasn't easy back in Nixon times, and it's not easy now. But what seems to be happening, and this is a convention of today versus the 1970s, things are accelerating at lightning speed. Yep. Even yesterday, it didn't look like there'd be any chance of this taking hold. And now it looks like it might even come to a vote in the Senate. It could yep. come to the vote in the Senate. And faced with a vote that could knock him out of office, Trump may agree to resign. But Rosemary, I always thought that you were, you know, you'd always exaggerate and use hyperbole to make a point. But all those points you've made are completely possible. This is the way things are moving. There might be a whole slew of pardons coming from Trump, including himself, his family, and as many people as he can name who've been arrested and charged in the Capitol takeover. So it is really fast and important that this moves fast.
And the fact, Mike, that the majority leader of or the outgoing majority leader of the Senate is now on board, basically, for this impeachment, means that there will be people, they're going to get some votes. And there may be a horse race here as to whether or not Trump gets thrown out. And he, and as you point out, both of you, Rosemary and Mike, don't think that the president isn't counting those votes right now, sitting there stewing in the White House.
So the two arguments, the two main arguments that seem to be coming from the Republicans this morning, I don't know if argument is the word, but the resolution to this issue, one is to censure the president and the other is to form a commission. To Rosemary's point, you can you can do all of them and still impeach him, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There's no and it seems I don't know and again this may just be my vantage point of this, but the Republican argument, Alan, seems to be getting weaker and weaker.
Well, I think they are in a very bad spot. I think Rosemary made all of those points. I mean, what are they going to say? Basically, they can't defend the fact that the hordes came into the H-O-R-D-E-S came into the Congress. They can't defend that. So what they have to say is, well, there's no real proof that the president had anything to do with it. You know, I've been thinking this is the closest that this country has come to fascism, I think, ever. And the fact that people are doing what they have to do, they're kicking him off the social media, they're doing all of those things, it's because they want to preserve democracy in this country.
One of the
I have a very wise friend in New York. She's not a journalist at all. She's actually an artist. And she asked me to frequently asked me to explain political points to her. And her question yesterday, I just loved it, was in other countries they have, and even in ours, we have revolutions and armed insurrections in order to win freedom. Here, isn't this insurrection to get a dictatorship? And that's so true. Why were they doing this? It's what line of reasoning have they been fed for years now by Republicans, by Donald Trump, that led to that just horrible action a week ago?
When you look at it seems as though more and more coverage, more and more tape, more and more video is coming out. That was the word I was looking for. More and more videos coming out and pictures from what happened last Wednesday, a week ago. And it continues to be just repulsive and stunning. And the fact that the stories continue, Rosemary, you mentioned the involvement of the three other of the three congressmen who had a hand allegedly in this, but also the fact that we don't know what's to come, right, Mike? We don't know what is the FBI is telling us. The information they gave their first, amazingly, their first briefing yesterday as to what happened and where they are in all this. None of that put at least me at ease to say, oh, we've got this under control.
No, instead of it kind of dying down, it seems like every single day more information comes out. Newer videos come out that show more blatant violence and not just desecration of the Capitol, but assaults on people, you know, using flag poles, et cetera, et cetera. And but that what Rosemary referenced and you referenced was that before the rally on January 6th, the day before, some congressmen were showing some of the people involved in the rally around the White House, showing them where the Senate met and where Nancy Pelosi's office was.
The Capitol,
now,
yeah.
Ostensibly, you know, Congress members give their constituents tours of the Capitol. It's not uncommon, but it definitely needs to be investigated.
Well, that's different than planning the overthrow. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yes. When you do the overthrow, now remember. Yeah. And but all kidding aside, it's a little humor helps digest this a little bit. But nothing is funny about how close we came. I mean, they could have broken that one scenario where they were chasing that one guard up the steps, and he kind of lured them away from the door to the Senate. They broke into
which
the Senate
unguarded,
1 minute.
Unguarded,
right?
Like,
I know.
It was completely,
but
and they
broke
were
in.
Sitting.
Right.
Yeah.
But remember, they broke into the Senate
the
1 minute after the senators were out. So they were still
in
there.
I think.
Go ahead,
I think. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt Mike because we're making the same point. I just want to emphasize it that I think the coverage has shown how incredibly scarily close we came to what might have been a severe hostage taking or death. Of the elected officials.
Yes.
To which I just want to add.
Even I don't want. Yeah. Even I don't want Mitch McConnell killed by armed insurrectionists.
And I want to add there were. And I want to add, Rosemary, there were five deaths.
Yeah.
Five deaths.
Yeah.
So this is.
But I'm talking mass deaths, and none of those were elected officials. So you understand my point. I'm not trying to desecrate or to bring down the five dead, but it might have been Pence and Pelosi and McConnell and whoever else they have decided are anti-Trump now. It's just horrifying.
We have a wonderful panel here. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armijo, and Mike Spain. Okay. Let's go to some letters regarding Rosemary's questions about why Trump supporters mounted an insurrection in order to install a dictatorship. I think part of the answer is that freedom is not a universal value. Rather, power is a universal value. Those mounting the insurrection believe that they would have more power under a Trump dictatorship. Rosemary?
Well, that's interesting. Haven't we always been taught that freedom was the universal value, that people all over the world, Arabs are said to never want a democracy, and yet that was struck down, I remember, during the Arab Springs about a decade ago, saying, no, they desire the same thing as people everywhere, freedom, self-determination. And it does seem that this power under Trump, that's a dictatorship. If you're in the right camp, in other words, allies of the person in power, then you hold power, and that's more valuable than freedom. It's so anti-American, so undemocratic that I'm just shaking my head in disbelief at it.
Susan writes, those rebels, quote unquote, see democracy and Democrats as the opposite of freedom. They feel that Dems impose too many rules, restrictions, and ridiculous, unnecessary laws, which take away their freedom. So they see their attempts at revolution are to gain freedom. Did you notice the flags with liberty on them?
Did you notice the anti-Semitic T-shirts? Did you notice the Confederate flag that they were waving?
Right.
Did you notice beating up on police officers? You know, there's a lot of do you notices there.
There were so many symbols. The New York Times today has a piece that identifies even more symbols. Those are the obvious ones, but you know, QAnon symbols and the three, the three number ones on the American flag and other symbols that have enormous meaning to these fringe groups and all of which evoke hatred and anti-democratic principles.
Mike Spain on the Roundtable panel on Wednesday, January 13th. Please note as you listen, every given topic's details and facts may have changed and evolved since the panels took place live earlier in the week. We'll be back with more after this. Thank you. Welcome back to Roundtable Panel of the Week in Review. I'm producer Sarah LaDuc. On Thursday, January 14th, Alan Chartok and Joe Donahue spoke again with Rosemary Armeo and with Siena College Professor of Comparative Politics Vera Icarius Kelly and Tetherless World Professor of Computer, Web, and Cognitive Sciences at RPI and Director of the RPI-IBM Artificial Intelligence Research Collaboration, Jim Hendler.
Let us talk about what happened yesterday. It was quite a day. Historic by all accounts, and certainly one that is, it's difficult to get your head around because the president was impeached for an unprecedented second time. Will go down in history as the only president to be impeached by the House of Representatives, not once, but twice, in 1 4-year term. Also, it was the most bipartisan impeachment ever, which I think bears noting, even though there were only 10 Republicans who voted for this. And then on top of all of that, you have, the inevitable question of now what? Now what do we do? And where does this go? The Senate majority leader for the moment, Mitch McConnell, has said, this is off my watch. When the Senate meets on the 19th, I turn everything over to Chuck Schumer, then it's his ball game. And that's how we're looking at this now. There were some thoughts and maybe even hopes that McConnell would take this on, although I believe that everyone on this particular panel was highly skeptical of that. And meanwhile, we also have the continued threats to this country. We're finding out a lot more of what happened a week and a day ago in Washington with the insurrection and the riot, and as well, great concerns as to what could be happening in the future. So a lot to unpack. Alan, we'll begin with you and make our way around the room here.
Well, it is obvious that Donald Trump is not a happy camper, to say the very least. I still can't figure out, and I really want to hear from everybody else on this, what people think was in his mind. Did he really think this was going to turn over the ship of state? There are many people who say, no, it was just to do this or do that. But I have a nagging feeling that he thought, based on his own narcissism and everything else, that people would say, we can't let this guy go. He's our president, and we're going to keep him here. And we saw the most incredible things. We saw AOC and others who really felt that their lives were in danger, because at least one Republican congresswoman had a picture of herself with a gun and saying she was going after Democrats, and she was going to do that. Now they put up gun things. They put up metal detectors, and the Republicans are complaining about the metal detectors crimping their style. It's just an extraordinary time in America, and let me tell you, an awful lot of things are happening now. Twitter takes them down. Social media takes the president down. Why? Well, nobody likes to take anybody down, but here was a guy who was threatening to replace the democratic values of this country with a would-be dictator. If not now, when?
Well, you take your good news where you can get it, but I, reading the headline that for whatever reason, Trump isn't taking Rudy Giuliani's calls anymore and they're blocked, I find that amusing. Jim Hendler.
Is there anybody that Trump hasn't turned on? Anyone?
No.
McConnell
say
or anybody else?
They say he's very isolated at the White House. So there you go. Just left with the voices in your head. Jim Hendler, go ahead.
Oh, gosh. My more conservative friends told me to keep an eye on Trump at the beginning because he was going to make history. I'm not sure this is what they had in mind. It really has been staggering. And, sort of the political junkie in me is just looking at this from a real politics point of view with no hint of where this goes or how it plays out, whether it's going to help or hurt each party and things like that. But I think, sort of the citizen in me is looking at this saying, the combination of just the outrage and seeing that bear out so fast versus the kind of craziness we were hearing from the Republicans yesterday who were defending him you know, there was a middle group who were sort of saying, okay, look, we didn't like what he did, but maybe impeachment's wrong. But then there were these crazies who were, you know, you're trying to steal the election still. So I don't know. It's this country is going to take a lot of work to get back in shape. And I was kind of hoping after the election and before the inauguration that we would, you know, we'd see some outrage, but I didn't think we'd see this kind of craziness that's going to make it really hard for anything to change in a big way over the next few years. We'll see a lot of good legislation happen, but
yeah,
the split in the country is going to be really hard to heal.
Vera.
Yeah, I mean, along those same lines, I think the national security question is foremost on my mind this week, actually, in terms of warnings and concerns. And I do understand that, you know, some representatives were really fearful, especially if it's the first time that they're encountering a threat to themselves or to their families. I'm just mentioning this as something that I remembered based on my own experience. I did a translation of an article that was posted on the internet about the Armenian genocide as a faculty at Siena. And as soon as it was posted, just an hour later, I received internet-based threats that called me a viper whose head should be cut off and a birthing agent of evil because I had translated something from German into English about the Armenian genocide and Turkish nationalists were targeting me. And I needed, you know, campus security and, you know, I got a panic button. And so that experience, I think, made me aware of the kinds of things that you might feel if on the internet there are direct threats against you. And, you know, these are at a much higher level, of course, the intensity, perhaps, and the credibility of those threats against some of the Congress people. So I feel for them because I think that's a really scary moment where you don't only fear for yourself in the coming months or who knows how long this takes, and for your family as well, and the security threat that's out there when you serve in Congress.
So I want to talk about Mitch McConnell, who, again, I think proved himself to be the master politician in Washington, even above my beloved Nancy Pelosi. He has managed to throw out doubts and criticism of Trump, who he has no love for, and yet he won't take up the impeachment right away. At first, that annoyed me because I think you could impeach him, could have done it, held a trial yesterday if he had wanted to. But in fact, I think that will work in favor of a more bipartisan impeachment. We are seeing every day more and more information come out, more evidence of the coordinated attack, the violence of the attack. That is not going to help Donald Trump. So I'm happy about that. And it won't fall on his watch, number two, a second advantage. It'll fall on Schumer's. And number three, it's going to mess up Biden, who wants a very fast-paced and ambitious plan to stimulate the economy and stop coronavirus. And this is not going to make it easier for him. So he accomplished, again, with one little move, being saying, oh, my hands are tied. We can't do it until after Trump is out. He accomplished three goals. That's really masterful. The second thing I want to talk about is that there's more action needed. Congress's work is not done. I think that action needs to be taken in the Senate against Hawley and Cruz at the very least, and in the House against Stefanik and others who continue to spread the big lie. Third is that Adam Schiff, I know, is working on this, and I hope he keeps his eye on the ball, which is that major reforms are needed to repair rents in tradition and constitution that Trump showed up. Impeachment is now in shreds. Is there and should there be rules on when you can do it and how you can do it? And what's a fast versus a regulation time impeachment? These are questions we've never had to face before, but we do because people have watched Trump and there will be others more competent who will follow him. The emoluments clause is still not solved. Trump violated that from day one. So that conservative thing about how Democrats wanted to impeach him from day one, we did. And it's true, and we should have, because he was violating the Constitution, in our view, since day one. And we've never resolved that. That needs to be done. I love Letitia James in New York. I hope other attorney generals are following her her model of putting out a warning today saying, do not mess with the Capitol on Inauguration Day or you will be prosecuted. I think there's a real imminent danger of more violence in the next week.
Rosemary Armeo on the roundtable panel on Thursday, January 14th. And finally, at the end of this year-long week, Alan Chartok and Joe Donahue were joined by President and CEO of the Business Council of New York State, Heather Bruschetti, former EPA Regional Administrator, Visiting Professor of Bennington College, and President of Beyond Plastics, Judith Enck, and Albany County District Attorney, David Soares.
The headlines all over, a lot of different places we could start, but I would really like to start with the vaccine. As eligibility for coronavirus vaccine expands in the U.S., so does confusion. At least 28 states have begun inoculating older people against the coronavirus, prompting questions about which groups get priority. The big problem, of course, demand has far outweighed supply, leading to overwhelmed public health departments. On Monday, there were operations put in place here in New York and in other states where the groups were starting to lay out their inoculation plans. And then, what, maybe three quarters of the way through the day, they said, okay, all of that stuff, by the way, we're now going from 75 to 65. So then everything got really screwed up. And not that it wasn't already screwed up before. Now, if there is a some good news here to report, I think it is that the president-elect has picked former FDA chief Dr. David Kessler, who helped speed the development of AIDS drugs, to become the top science official at Operation Warp Speed. He will be leading the vaccine efforts as of January 20th in this country. So as we look at this, the problems are fairly obvious. If anyone is in what we are, so the classifications 1A, 1B, 1C, and then you go down. So 1A was to be our frontline workers, and we have completed that in many places, not all, but in many places. Here in New York, we have moved on to 1B, and that is the problem because the big question is who gets priority. And it changes from state to state. It changes from place to place. And the actual plans change as both federal officials get involved and state officials get involved. And, of course, the federal government has thrown most of this onto the states who aren't really equipped to deal with it. The final thing I will say before we go to our wonderful panel for their thoughts on all of this is there's also the point that the stumbles that we have seen, and they are major stumbles because people who are, you know, top of the list that were supposed to get priority now have appointments in April or May. Mm-hmm. And so as experts warn of the vaccine stumbles out of the gate, they say that the reason is because Trump officials refuse to consult with the Biden team. As the cases continue to overwhelm hospitals, the Trump administration said we're not going to have any close communication with the Biden team and coming in and helping them try to get this under wraps. Meanwhile, we had our deadliest day on record yesterday. So with all of that said, I'll go to the group.
Well, you know, take a look at Trump. He's a killer. That's right. He's a murderer. Because he could have, in fact, taken hold of this whole thing and made it much easier for Americans right from the beginning, and he didn't do it. Now he's not doing it again. He doesn't mention it. He doesn't seem to care about it. That, of course, leads to what I just said. I'm not going to have to say it again. Okay, now, for those of us, I'm 79 years old. For those of us who would qualify in New York, we don't qualify in Massachusetts. The governor has been clear on that. So now we have to wait until February, and then maybe we won't be backed up until April in order to get the shot. Look, Joe and everybody, this is all about staying alive. You know, this is the most important story that there is right now. And that not only to me, but to everybody who needs to get this shot. We put people on the moon. We have solved so many problems. This needs to be done. And Joe Biden is saying it needs to be done and is telling the truth. He says it's a disgrace what has happened up until now. And it has been. So we can only hope that when Biden comes in, he makes some sense out of this and we get going.
Judith Henk.
Well, I agree. It is an urgent situation. Deaths in the U.S. from COVID are up 39% in the last 2 weeks. And we're all, you know, waiting for the inauguration of Biden and Harris. Some things are not going to change on day one. We're still going to deal with systemic racism and the empowerment of these domestic terrorists, which I'm sure we'll talk about. That doesn't all change on day one. But I think the appointment of David Kessler will change things dramatically. You're going to have competent professionals who actually want to help prevent COVID cases. But I do want to focus on a moment on how inadequate the New York State response has been. We've known that the Trump administration was going to hand this over to the states. If anyone has tried to get on a website to get an appointment for a vaccine for elderly friends or yourself, you see that the website either doesn't work or gives you appointments never. And what I don't understand is the counties all had established plans on how to do vaccine distribution. And for some reason, the governor's office decided not to have the counties in the lead, but to give it to the hospitals. The hospitals seem a little busy these days. So I think that's probably was not a smart move. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say my apologies for interrupting, Judith, but I just wanted to say, like, here in Albany and in the greater Northeast, our hub is Albany Med. So that is the main hub where that vaccination information is coming out of. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I've been on the State Health Department website every day, and it's a mess. And what I don't understand, and I don't blame the State Health Department, they are extremely busy dealing with this health crisis. We've known for months that eventually the vaccine would come. So why weren't different parts of state government given the assignment to have an effective website, provide clear information? It is a mess. And I hope Heather's organization can step in and help the state. I think the private sector maybe has more experience with distribution, with functioning websites, because right now, you've got, you know, I've got a friend who's 80, who is not scheduled to get her vaccine till late March, early April. And also just the stress of so many older folks trying to work these websites.
If they even have that technology. I mean, that's
exactly.
I have an elderly, my mother and father-in-law, my in-laws. And they're trying to deal with this, and they're telling these people to deal with second party authentication. I mean, mm-hmm. it's just and they're in tears, and I don't know. Mm-hmm. There's got to be an easier way.
Yeah, we need a reset. The state of New York is not handling the vaccination process well. I don't think that's an inaccurate statement. The important thing is that it gets fixed, and it gets fixed soon. I think people are patient. Very few people expected to be vaccinated, I think, in January, February.
Right.
But we need a system that works, and we don't currently have it.
All right. Well, lucky you, Heather. Judith has thrown this into your lap, so you solve it.
Here we come. Here we come to save the day. Well, I mean, I wanted to step back for a minute and just say that this really illustrates why this should have been a national plan. It should have been rolled out at the national level. When they started the vaccine development, they should have started a plan federally to have a coordinated rollout across every state so that it's consistent, so you don't see these stories about people going to another state to try and get the vaccine, which then, by the way, prevents someone in that state from being able to get the vaccine. So, the idea that it should be all handled by the states individually, you know, within some broad parameters without a lot of guidance, I think is just absurd. So that's my first point. My second point is that, you know, we've been working really closely with the governor's office on trying to find ways for our members, particularly the large employers, to be able to engage, you know, to do some of the vaccinations because they have people who are coming in every day who meet the criteria. And, you know, it's been a challenge, but the biggest challenge is that there's not enough supply right now.
Right.
That's what we're being told by the administration. And so regardless of how clunky or how awkward or how difficult it is, the information about what supply is available really should be front and center, because then I think people I'm not going to say it solves anything, it doesn't ease their frustrations, but at least they'll have a clearer sense as to why it's taking so long. We certainly have members that are happy to step in and assist with the technology issues and all of that. But just in terms of having enough supply, and that's a failing of the federal government. That really is. They took a pass on some additional supply early on from one of the manufacturers, and that was a huge mistake. Getting this to our, you know, getting this deployed across all the states quickly is something that they should have been planning for from the very beginning.
David Soares.
I think what this is an example of is the depth and breadth of the incompetence of our federal government. And it's just staggering. And I think what makes it worse is now when you start to reflect back on the early conversations between Trump and Woodward that took place early on, where he downplayed the significance of this coronavirus. Look, the reality is that there is no greater nation on planet Earth that has the kind of expansive resources that could have knocked this thing out literally within months. We have the most incredible National Guard structure in every state, and these people are experts. These people are experts in organization and deploying resources. We see them and how they work in times of crisis and disaster. Well, this is a crisis and disaster. We have a lot of resources that are currently sitting on the bench. I personally watched what's happening here in Albany County. It is unfair, as someone said earlier, to expect that hospitals could do what they're doing right now with people who are sick and infected, and at the same time take on the additional responsibilities of making sure that they get all of the people vaccinated. Look, we have incredible resources right here in our own county. Our Department of Health is a fantastic group of experts, and we need them. There's no skill set there in the deployment of resources. They need additional structures. The Albany County Sheriff's Department is one of the best sheriff's department that we have in the state. Watching them go ahead and distribute vaccines in the flawless manner that they were doing, they've set the model that every single county and Department of Health should be following. It's when you take the resources that have expertise in doing certain things and you combine them with the other resources in your own community that it's the only way that we're going to be able to get these vaccines in the arms of people.
David Soares on the Roundtable panel on Friday, January 15th. Full episodes of the Roundtable panel are available online at wamc.org/roundtable. This has been this week's Roundtable panel, The Week in Review. I'm Sarah LaDuke. Thank you for listening. Thank you.